Welcome to Unlapped. Katie George here. Time to recap what was a really exciting weekend in Australia. I'm joined by my friend Spencer Hall, friend of the show, as well as special guest, F1 insider Tim Haraney, the host of Nailing the Apex. Welcome into both of you. How are you?
Couldn't be better.
Doing well, yeah. Thanks. Thanks very much, Katie, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of our guys, Nate Saunders and Lawrence Edmondson, they went from Australia to Japan to prepare for Suzuka. And as you both can imagine, the time change is rather difficult. Spencer, I think Laz is on a motorbike trail of some sort, some excursion. Pretty on brand.
That's extremely on brand. Wear a helmet, please.
Yeah, seriously. All right, well, let's get into it because there's a lot to unpack here. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. It's greatly appreciated. Carlos Sainz, man of the hour, man of the month, man of the year. What do we think, guys? What an unbelievably flawless race. Tim, I'll start with you. What impressed you, obviously, about Carlos Sainz today taking the Austrian Grand Prix podium? But obviously, he needed a little help from the Formula One gods thanks to Max Verstappen's retirement.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's such a great comeback story, right? You know, the guy has his appendix removed. He doesn't know if he's going to be coming back and when he's going to be coming back. And, you know, you run that risk of once you give your seat up to another driver and that driver does well, sometimes those things snowball. So for Carlos to get himself ready for the Australian Grand Prix and all of the things that went into his preparation, it's such a cool story. And I think, like, even at the end of the day, when we just take a look at that race and what Ferrari had done as a whole, like, they actually, Katie, had legit pace to push Red Bull, to put pressure on Max Verstappen, especially when we look at, you know, Ferrari had issues with tire deg last year. Now this year, it's one of their strengths. And when it came to the Australian Grand Prix, there's so much graining with the tires, and the team itself able to handle that and get over that. And then for Carlos to just put in the performance, it was pretty remarkable, I would say.
Yeah, truly. I mean, Spencer, when you look at it, he was 16 days removed, I believe, from the emergency appendectomy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's in a precarious situation because he doesn't have a contract beyond this season. We all know the bombshell news that Lewis Hamilton is taking his seat. You wondered if he was going to kind of have this, like, revenge tour of, like, F you, you picked the wrong driver. What about me? But I think he's doing wonders for himself that he's absolutely going to have a seat. And we'll discuss if it's possibly going to be, I don't know, at Red Bull. But do you think he's by far the best free agent on the market available for next season?
In terms of experience, yeah, if we're not playing fantasy driver games, right, Tim, if we're not going, well, this guy in F2 is real good, or, you know, we're going to call up this reserve driver, or, you know, I'm going to trade Yuki for this. A lot of people get caught in these, like, trade machine scenarios when it comes to drivers that aren't realistic but are really fun, right? Like, okay, I've got Liam Lawson, I'm going to trade him over here. Well, no, stop. If you wanted to just say the obvious, easy answer, the 29-year-old who's got 3 wins and a load of experience and an inspiring story. Like on top of all of this, that engineers are going to make this decision based on, ooh, cool story. But I will tell you, the PR people, they appreciate a cool story. And they appreciate a guy who's as obviously amiable, camera friendly, and has this, like, great manner about him. You know, a guy who will sing Sade over the radio when he wins, Mr. Smooth Operator himself. It's not real close. It's not close at all in terms of best available driver. Did Ferrari make a mistake long-term investing in Leclerc? No, he's younger. He's got more wins. He's an incredible driver. Let's emphasize that. Charles Leclerc is an incredible driver. Carlos Sainz is a slightly older, also incredible driver. And that's a factor when you're talking about long-term investments. I do have one critique of Carlos Sainz, though. I don't think he milked the injury enough. I would have, I think, you know, I would have done a little more theatrical flinching. I would have tried to get, I would have gotten as much sympathy out of that as possible. Not that he didn't get a lot anyway for an amazing performance just 16 days after surgery, but flinch a little more, man. Play it up.
I think he earned a lot of brownie points when he got on the radio and said, have Charles drive up next to me and let's celebrate this one together. I thought that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're your Ferrari and you get that 1-2, especially in a season the way that it started off, and we don't know what Red Bull Racing is going to look like in a few races time. Can other teams keep competing against them? Can they put pressure on them? Whatever. If you're Ferrari, I mean, you want to take that moment and, you know, soak every ounce of joy out of it as you can. So trying to get a picture of both cars 1-2 finished across the finish line, I mean, yeah, that's a marketing dream for sure, right? But just to go back to Carlos and that story and all of these things that he had to do to get to the track, and like just being inside of a Formula One car and just being exposed to the forces and how much, you know, physical effort goes into it. I mean, these guys are athletes, right? And the amount of, I would say the last 5 to 10 laps were probably the hardest for him, because, you know, at that moment you're starting to get exhausted, and for him, he was. And so I think, you know, obviously the checkered flag came at the right time. And I also think the more I look at this race, the more I'm like, if there were 10 laps left, I mean, could Charles Leclerc actually have caught Carlos Sainz, and could Lando Norris have caught Charles Leclerc? So it's just, there's so many different things to this race. It was a great race. And like, yeah, just the whole story itself is incredible.
You know what? Fred Vasseur doesn't need heart palpitations, Tim. Okay. I think he was very happy seeing what took place.
What about my
needs? Good point.
What about our needs, Kate?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
As I watched it, I didn't get to watch it live, obviously, because of the time change and I was working a different game, but I watched it back. I got greedy. I was thinking, oh my gosh, what if this happened at Monza? Could you imagine?
Oh, crazy. Mm-hmm. It'd be wild.
So I'm manifesting that at this point.
This was the race, by the way, for What About My Needs. Like, Max Verstappen goes out and the announcers do this job of, oh, that's unfortunate. No one watching it thought that. Everyone was like, well, what about my needs? I need competition. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, Sainz, he's struggling. You're like, that's what I need. There's so many things in Formula One when you're watching it where you go, oh, that sucks for him. I can't stop watching it, though.
It was like, you never wish ill for anybody or at the detriment of a driver. And obviously Max Verstappen has been so elite for so long, it seems at this point, but it was a really nice change of pace. When you look forward, Tim, to, you know, Red Bull, Mercedes, thinking about their lineup for a season from now, I mean, where would you see or want signs to fall if there was an opening with either of those teams? Do you even think that that's a possibility?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, and it's one that I think like all of us have been thinking after seeing how well I think Carlos has performed at the start of the season in Bahrain, and then again after Australia. I know for Carlos, he wants stability. He wants something that's a little more longer term. I think he's done with these, you know, 2-year, 1-year deals and whatever. And I think he's earned it, right? I mean, for any racing driver, when you get to Formula One, you know, Ferrari always is kind of like the goal, right? That's always a team you want to race for. And you have so much more value once you do that. And once you do that and you have success, you have even more value because you did it with Ferrari. For Carlos, like, there was a lot coming into the start of the season where it's like, okay, yeah, he's going to Sauber. He's going to help bring Audi in because his dad's connections with Audi is really strong there. And then I'm kind of thinking, like, you know, now when we look at it, it's like, not to say anything bad about Sauber, but at the end of the day, it's like, is that the team you really want to kind of go backwards to? Like, you would think, you know, for him, you have to stay, I think, in the teams that are in that top three, top four, you know, fighting for podiums, fighting for race wins. And I think for him, like, I could see him going to a team like Mercedes, no problem. There's been a lot of talk about Red Bull after Christian Horner's comments following the Australian Grand Prix. But I mean, I don't know if he would want to go back to that, because that's where he obviously started his Formula One career with Toro Rosso. So I don't necessarily think that could be a place where he would want to go back to. And would you want to play number two to Max Verstappen? And what does their engine program look like in 2026? So there's a lot of there's a lot of question marks there. Where we're with Mercedes, like, okay, you're going to have some stability there for sure. And who knows about their engine program for 2026? It's probably going to be pretty competitive because, hey, it's Mercedes. That's what they're good at.
We can hope.
This feels like, do you want to be a two, like a clear two?
Yeah.
Or do you want to be a 1A?
Yeah,
you want to find a situation where you're ambitions are fulfilled by being the clear number one guy on a team that is not able to supply you with number one degree technology or performance? Or do you want to be 1A or 2 on a team where you're going to win and you're going to be in that spot?
Where would you consider 1A?
Mercedes is interesting because, you know, I feel like with the departure of Hamilton, everyone is thinking, well, Russell's a clear one. Russell, I don't see that. I see, if you see the introduction of a senior driver to Russell who is capable of more consistent performance, it's not always George's fault, but sometimes George, relative to his peers, right, and his tier, can be a little erratic. I think that's a fair criticism to say that sometimes George can get in his own head. Sometimes you hear him get a little inconsistent, or watch him get a little inconsistent. I could see something where that is, to me, more a pairing of equals than, say, going to Red Bull, where you're clearly the number two, mm-hmm. or a better situation than saying, all right, I'll go to Sauber or wherever. I'll go to a team where I know I'm going to be finishing at best somewhere around 12, right, or 10. But I will be the guy. And that's not fair. I just sort of think that's the way the economies of F1 line up. Is that fair?
Well, do you think that some of these drivers, other than Lewis Hamilton, because I don't think personality-wise and just history-wise it would ever work, do you think some of these drivers, because they're all, I don't want to call them egomaniacs, but they're all unbelievably confident in who they are and in their skills, or they mm-hmm. wouldn't be one of 20, right, on this grid. Do you think mentally some of them think, I want to be Max Verstappen's teammate because I mm-hmm. think I could do it. I think I could rival him. Mm. Do you think there's any of that? Or do you think some of them just shy away from it altogether?
I mean, that's a great point that you make, Katie, because you're right. I mean, like any driver would think, okay, I'm going to go to Red Bull and I'm going to challenge Max Verstappen. And then the team is going to have to see how good I am. And then they're going to have to make the decision on who is number one, who is number two. Or am I, like Spencer said, 1A, sort of 1B. Mm-hmm. Like it is, I think at the end of the day, you have to see, like, what's the contract look like? What does it say in there? Like, does it say literally you're not going to be prioritized over XYZ driver? Like, what are the mm-hmm. fine details? And obviously those are things we never get to see. But at the end of the day, Spencer makes a great point. When you look at George Russell, and it's kind of like, okay, if you're Mercedes, is he your championship winning driver? Is he the driver who is going to be that next to step up when Lewis Hamilton leaves? And some people would say no. Some people would say yes. Some people are maybe. And I think if you're Toto Wolff, you have to look at George's body of work. Like, what has he done? And everything that he's ever gotten into, he's won a championship. He's mm-hmm. won races in. And when you're looking at growing a team at the moment that is struggling, what do you need? And as a team principal, I would need experience, and I would need a safe pair of hands to put the car in, so you can have two drivers. They're going to push each other to push the car better, to push the team better. And I don't think necessarily, like, that's not something like Red Bull actually really needs.
Tim, that's such a good framing for it, because I wanted to just ask, like, flat out, if it's not a... To borrow some language from the affirmation of Instagram influencers, okay, right? which is when you don't want to do something, what do you say, right? If it ain't a hell yes, it's a no, right? Is George Russell a hell yes? No, I don't think he is. I don't think he's a one.
Why? Because he makes handful of mistakes here and there. Is that why?
How's
that untimely, this? Costly mistakes.
Yeah, and also because situationally he's been in a spot where, no, he's not the number one guy, okay? Maybe he hasn't received priority at times, and maybe he's had some bad luck. His career still very short when it comes to Formula One rides, you know, has one win, will have others, but I don't think he's a hell yes. I think you say, yeah, he could be a number one driver. He could be a guy who is a champion, but I don't think he's a hell yes. He's not a slam dunk. Like, if I give you Prime Lewis, Prime Max, right? Even if I give you, like, guys who are older on the grid who've had success, like Fernando Alonso, at times you've looked at them and gone, that is unquestionably the number one driver. I don't know if he has that kind of confidence. And I just say this to get to my point, which is, if there is a little sneaky window of possibility that Carlos Sainz can come to your team, that window is open for him to be the number one. If it's not an unquestioned, here's our one, here's our two. And that's, I think, where Sainz where it gets tricky, but where I also think, like, as a compliment to Sainz, I think temperamentally we've seen him handle that really well. We've seen him do that and continue to perform.
Hey, Katie, when you take a look at what, you know, George has started off with this season, right? I mean, if we were to say hell yes for like last year or the year before, right? Mm-hmm. Or if we take a look at this season in particular, you know, George has, and, you know, you kind of see it when you're sitting down doing an interview with him and you're talking to him about the team and Lewis Hamilton and all these other things that are happening, you know, going on behind the scenes. And you can really see that he actually does look like he's trying to, like, force his will upon the team to be that number one driver. So far, mm-hmm. you know, he has performed better than Lewis, and he has out-qualified Lewis, and we're only three races mm-hmm. in. It is a very short span of data that we're actually taking a look at. But at the end of the day, I mean, Katie, when you take a look at all that, like, what do you think?
I think he's an unbelievably consistent driver for as young as he is. Now, obviously, I think it helps when you are put on a team like Mercedes. I thought his time at Williams was very impressive, much like we've seen from Alex Albon. I can't believe Alex Albon is still driving for Williams, but that's for another podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for his age and being Lewis Hamilton's teammate, to handle that pressure, he has done a masterful job of that. I think, unfortunately, there is just a handful of mistakes that just seem to come at really crucial bad times. Like, I feel like he's not as unlucky as Charles Leclerc. And again, that's a podcast for another time that we've talked about many times on this show. Mm-hmm. But I just think that there's a few mistakes, moments, crashes that stick out. We were like, dude, you had it in the bag. And then how'd you let it slip away? And so I would be really curious. As a fan, I would love to see Carlos Sainz and George Russell as a pair, because I don't think it's black and white that George Russell would be the number one driver on a team or a pairing like that. I think that there would be some wiggle room. And based on the way that Carlos Sainz is driving, I think it's been tremendous. Ferrari, clearly, number two team on the grid at this point. As you mentioned, Tim, at the top of the episode, they had the pace, even if Max Verstappen didn't have the brake issue, that maybe they could have been fighting for the top spot at the podium. I would maybe go down a little bit in the list because we're talking about George Russell and Mercedes. When you look at the two teams, maybe behind Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, I think McLaren, based on their weekend, has solidified themselves as the number three team on the grid. Would you agree with that, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely agree with you on that for sure. 100%. I mean, just seeing like where they started this season, like where they even started, we're all kind of like, is McLaren going to be any good this year? Like,
well, it couldn't be worse than the start of last year. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true. But it was still like, you know, sitting on the preseason, you know, press conferences and talking to the team, and you're kind of just like, they don't have a lot of parts made for this car yet. And I'm like on the other podcast, like hyping up how great McLaren is going to be at the start of the season. And I'm kind of like, oh God. And then we get to Australia and you really start to see this team understand the car, figure it out, starting to find the sweet spot in the car of what they have on that particular track. Now, once we get to a circuit like Japan, is McLaren going to be competitive there? I think they will, because they have a car that really suits those, that high speed content, where in Australia you had a little bit of that as well, but really did a good job of managing the tires. I think one of the things with McLaren, and we may see this later on in the season, is that, you know, they really feel they can grab a race win this year. And you know what? Like, if they can bring just that right upgrade, kind of like what they did last year, that's going to claw them back 0.3 or so, which is quite a bit. But if they're able to do that, then I honestly don't see why they couldn't just push for a race wins at some point this season.
Okay, don't flip me off by asking this, Spencer. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Lando that gets his first race win, or Oscar Piastri?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a nice reference.
Did you see that clip?
A nice reference to Lando being harassed by a fan asking when he's going to win his first race, and then Lando responding by telling him that he's number one. Yeah. Good on you, Lando, by the way. That's it. Fair play.
He's cheeky.
If you enter the arena, sometimes, you know, you got to fight, and that fan found out the hard way. Is he going to win? I think this is an interesting 1A, 1B team where everything is managing to work out well, because I could see either one of these guys stealing a win. I really could, because, and additionally, no team is better prepared for me organizationally to pull off a 0.2. I'm not going to go 0.3, Tim, but like 0.2 hack in the middle of the season, because they've done it. I've seen this team do it. This is the team that to me is the most like, we'll see. Like, that's their engineering profile is, I don't know. Let's try that. Oh, cool. We have a competitive car. We have two competitive cars. And I feel like that's kind of their culture. And I feel like that if they have to adjust, we've seen them do that. We've seen them do that midseason. We've seen them get upgrades and become even more competitive over the course of a season. Now that they've done that and gotten to this level, why not do it again? I think that they're more than capable of that. And they have such a good, Katie, you know that I do this when we talk about Lando and Oscar as a pair, but I'm going to do it again. Like, such a good vibe. Like, I can see either one of them doing it. I could see Lando sneaking a win. I could see Oscar sneaking a win away from the big three. It's entirely possible, because I think that's just how this team is built. I get very happy talking about them, because I'm like, not going to win, but they could do a lot of really exciting things.
I think they're like two teammates at this moment who are probably, they're probably two of the strongest driver pairings on the grid, I would say. They're not.
You think they're the closest? They're 1 point separates them at this point. Do you think they're the closest in terms of talent, race craft? I mean, it's hard for me to ask that, because I think Charles and Carlos are very close as drivers, obviously.
Yeah.
We've seen that for multiple seasons at this point. Yeah. But would you say McLaren, those two drivers, as young as they are both up there?
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely say that. And I would say there's probably room for even more growth with both drivers, especially with Oscar. Like, he has, at the beginning of his Formula One career, I think, you know, a lot of his issues were tire management, understanding the tire. How does he keep it within a window where it doesn't just rip itself apart and he loses places and snowballs from there? You look at what he had done at the Australian Grand Prix, and you take a look at like just how he brings the tire into temperature, how he starts using the hard compound tire, how he gets it ready, and then how there's still some left towards the end of the race to hold off Sergio Perez behind him. Like, it was a very mature drive from him. And those things, that experience, it soaks into you, and you take it with you for the rest of your career. And so that's why, like, when I look at it, I get really excited when I talk about Oscar Piastri, guys.
You should.
I honestly think, like, he is an incredible talent, and there is a reason why Zach Brown went to the efforts to pull him away from Alpine.
That's a nice way to put it. He went to the efforts.
Endeavored.
That's a good way to put it. Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, for Mercedes, it's just trending downward at this point. It wasn't a great qualifying to start the weekend with Yuki and both Astons out qualifying Lewis Hamilton. Then it went from bad to worse when he obviously had a DNF. And then, as we mentioned, George Russell had a solid race up until the very end. I don't know, Tim, is this what you expected from Mercedes three races in, or were you more optimistic coming into the season?
Yeah, I was, Katie, I was way more optimistic. Like, I was like pounding that drum, like, Mercedes is coming back. They're going to be great. And the reason I say all that is just simply because of that championship pedigree that they have. And add on top of that their infrastructure, the amount of technology that they have. They have a lot better equipment than a lot of other teams do as well. And so for them to sort of, you know, show up with this iteration, this W15, a different concept, it just takes a while to learn something like that. And I think one of their bigger issues with this car is heat sensitivity and temperature change within the track, obviously. And then, you know, if you look at the W14, the W13, you know, obviously those aren't great race cars. I think this is a better race car that they actually have here. I think the big thing is trying to understand it and trying to just find, and George actually had said this to us in Bahrain, is just trying to find that sweet spot with this car in the regulation that we're in. I mean, again, once they do that, are they going to unlock like a ton of performance and like compete against Red Bull? I mean, probably not. That we're probably looking at this being more of sort of a 2 year adventure for them, I would say.
I was going to ask, when you talk about heat issues with the car, yeah, are we talking about heat management within the actual sort of drivetrain, or are we talking about managing heat performance with the car when it comes to where the rubber meets the road?
Yeah, so like in Bahrain, they were having heat issues in terms of drivetrain, engine, mm-hmm, and that kind of thing. But
can you explain drivetrain for those listening?
Sure, like, you know, like engine overheating, power, mm-hmm, unit overheating, all of those kinds of things. Not getting enough airflow in there to keep things cool. Not getting enough airflow maybe into the radiator as well to help with, yeah, that power unit. But I think when I heard James Allison speak yesterday about some of their issues, it did sound like tire temperature. So when there's a change in outdoor temperature, really, when you go from something, mm-hmm, that's colder to something that's a little more hotter, and the car has an issue with making that transition, or they're having an issue with trying to find the right balance for the car, do they take downforce off when it gets hotter, mm-hmm, out? Is that what they have to do? Is it tire pressure related? And there are so many different factors that go into it, and that's obviously why they get paid what they get paid and why they have the technology with it that they have, so they can investigate this a little bit further. But it's these types of things that they're going to keep having to learn as this year sort of goes along, because they made such a massive change with their car.
All right, thank you for nerding out. I really needed that. Like, that was, you know, felt a little low on it. Now I'm good. You know, now I have the thing we can make fun of Mercedes for the rest of the year. Too hot. So sweaty.
Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer.
Yes.
Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Yuki Tsunoda.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
What'd you think?
P7.
I knew you'd be thrilled.
Our guy. I legit am. Like, that's not a joke. There are no jokes told here, all right? Yuki's great, and Yuki's a fun interview. And Yuki is really good at his job, and he hasn't had a great car. And I just feel like we are in the ongoing audition for a better ride with a stiff, bad car that he's got at AlphaTauri, right? Like,
V-Carb.
V-Carb. I'm going to get used to that, okay? But
no one will.
No one will at all. But it's a tough position for Yuki, and he's making the best of it. That's what he's got to do right now. But mm-hmm, a tough driver, an aggressive driver, like I will always, always ride for the guys who maybe have P8 in the bag but want to turn it into P7 with a little risk taking. I will always ride for the driver who doesn't know the mic is on, which is usually Yuki. So I feel like when we talk about free agent drivers, when we talk about signs, yeah, that's the obvious choice, right? But Yuki, to me, has a spot, right? Like, Yuki, to me, like, if you want to, okay, what's his ultimate, like, where's his peak? Where's he going to be, right? I think Yuki's, yeah, like, on that, like, Bottas track of, like, all-time great, you know, two. All-time great number two guy. Like, that, to me, would be, I think, an ideal role for Yuki. Somebody who's tenacious, somebody who can drive anything, right? Like, you hand it to him and go, okay, make the best of it, right? What if we give you the number two car? He'll be fine with that.
Would you compare that to maybe a Valtteri Bottas career? Is that
I that's fair? The parallel I have in my head that okay, he and Valtteri are kind of similar in terms of where I think they fit best, right? So I look forward, yeah, like, And I think he's particularly useful to the racing fan now because we know who number one is. We know who number one is going to be. If you want somebody to root for who's going to make that like 9-8-7 spot really interesting, right? The bottom half of the top 10. Yuki to me it is right there. And I think has a storyline that doesn't just end there. Like I hope Yuki gets a spot at a bigger team where he's able to contribute in a car that can actually live up to the driver as opposed to the driver having to, you know, push the car like he does.
Well, it's layered, right? Because he's also got Daniel Ricciardo as a teammate and Tim with Yuki's performances as of late, not just in races, but over the entirety of a weekend, he's outperforming Daniel Ricciardo, who's obviously trying to regain his footing and find stability within the sport. How much pressure do you think Yuki finishing P7 and racing at this level puts on Daniel Ricciardo moving forward?
Yeah, I think it puts a huge amount on Ricciardo for sure. I appreciate how excited Spencer gets about Yuki because, you know, I think he's a perfect example of that rookie that comes into Formula One, has a difficult time, but it shows just how much these younger drivers, when they first get into Formula One, have to learn to get to that level where they are performing at such a great level. And I think he is that perfect example because we're coming into that, you know, whatever it is, third year for him. And it's like, yeah, you know, now you're starting to see him really flourish. Now you're starting to see what he can actually do because of all those things he's had to learn. And that's why I always say with drivers, it does take time when you're a rookie and you're young and you get into Formula One, it takes a very long time to learn and a lot of things to learn. And I think he's a great example of that, but he's taking it to Danny Ric. He really is. And Ricciardo is absolutely struggling with what we just don't know at this moment because he is having so many issues and hearing him at the end of qualifying at the Australian Grand Prix. And I watched his onboard and it looked like a great lap. And then he got that lap time deleted for track limits. And he sounds like a driver that like, hey, look, you know, this car's not giving me what I need, but these are great laps. So what's going on here? When he was with McLaren, it was sort of a different story, right? It was like, oh, I'm really struggling with the car.
I feel like it's been a different story every step of the way with every team.
Yeah, you can say that too.
Guys, I was going to ask, has anyone struggled in so many, in as diverse a fashion as Daniel Ricciardo?
Most people haven't made that many moves to different teams. Right. I think that lends itself. A little.
Yep, for sure. 100%. But it's not good enough if he wants to try and be up at the big team. It's just not. And I think when you're Christian Horner and Helmut Marko and you're looking around with like, okay, are we going to keep Sergio Perez or are we going to let him go? And if we let Sergio go, then who are we going to put in here? Right. And it's like, it's such a huge issue, I think, for them to have at this moment. If Daniel's not really performing, then you got to look at Yuki Tsunoda. You just have to, I think.
Okay, hypothetical. If you're Helmut Marko, you're Christian Horner, and I'm asking both of you, of the four drivers, who would you want as Max Verstappen's teammate? Sergio Perez continues on, Carlos Sainz, Yuki Tsunoda, or Daniel Ricciardo?
Carlos Sainz, I would do everything I could to get him, but I don't know if he would want to go back.
That's the smart choice, right? If you can't make the smart choice, though, and I feel like Daniel Ricciardo is not a realistic option there. I don't think I don't think for several different reasons he's the answer. Then that puts us between who? That puts us between Yuki and I'll take Yuki. I won't even go to the second one. I would take Yuki. And I say that because not just because I'm biased, I'll fully disclose my biases here. Yeah. One, very, very manageable budget wise for him because Yuki is not making a whole lot and Yuki is going to keep it
pinching
under the cap.
Pennies.
Yeah, for Red Bull. That's what I'm doing. I'm pinching pennies for the second or first most valuable racing team, depending on your valuation. You're welcome, Helmut. Second, I would say that I think stylistically, I think they match up well. Like, I think that's a pretty good matchup. And also, doesn't Red Bull like aggro? Doesn't Red Bull like everybody to just be as aggressive as possible at all times? A boiler room, a pressure cooker, you know, that throw Yuki in there. I think that's a great mix.
That would be an unbelievable pairing, I think.
The bluntest team. The team with
very blunt.
The team with the most not safe for work, like in-race radio you've ever heard in your life.
The most sifted through radio messages before being put on television.
Yeah. Note, Red Bull, follow Tim's advice, not mine. Mine is fun. Tim's smart.
Hey, can we give Haas a little kudos? Round of applause, double the points. Good for that. Haas has actually exceeded all expectations with the start of their season, Tim.
Yeah, they have. They've been great. Absolutely great. I honestly, at the start of the season, Katie, I was doing a hit for SportsCenter, and they were like, okay, we're going to do
brag.
This. Because this was on live TV, and they're like, okay, who's going to be like, what's the pecking order? And I'm like, well, Haas is going to be the worst. They're dead last. And I put them down here, and I'm like, and then there's going to be a ton of space, and then Alpine, and then there's going to be a bit more space. And I'm like, and then Williams, Sauber, the a little more space, but Haas, I put way down here. And so,
yeah. And then Alpine said, hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. but for them to show up, I mean, it's been, it really incredible, you know, to see the performances that they've put in, and you know, great, team player, Kevin Magnussen was in Jeddah for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And I think Katie, when we look at this team, moving forward, one of the most important things for them is just that upgrade schedule and making sure that they are bringing parts to the car that are performing, not like last year.
Yeah, for sure. It's been good to see. I'm happy for them. I wondered where they would start after obviously parting ways with Gunther Steiner, who I'm a huge fan of. But they've done a really, really nice job so far in his absence. And so I don't think there's any fear or worry of kind of the direction that they're heading.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I know that this was obviously discussed ad nauseum in depth, but I just want to get your all's thoughts on it, because this is the first time I've seen it since covering the sport. And I know, Tim, you obviously have covered this much longer. Spencer, you've been around motor racing for a really long time. I want to talk about Williams' situation. Obviously, Alex Albon wrecks his car. It's not in a position to be raced on Sunday. And so they basically say, hey, Logan, you're benched. We're going to use your car and give it to Alex Albon because we think he's got a better chance of getting us some points this weekend. Brutal. I mean, it's a cutthroat sport. I get it. I understand that, you know, management has really tough decisions to make. But is this something, Spencer, we see often in motorsport when unfortunate circumstances arise like this?
Not in my experience as a motorsports fan. There are parts debates. There are decisions made about where resources are allocated that are sometimes hard. I don't think you've seen anything this dramatic in terms of those allocations, either in F1 or definitely not in NASCAR. Heck, NASCAR, they'll be like, bolt a lawn chair in it, man. We're going to make it work, right? We'll get a car on the road. Might not have a hood, but we'll get a car on the road. Obviously, F1, a little more complex machine than that, but still, it's stunning to me to have those kind of issues where you look up and there are headlines that say things like, Williams will have two F1 cars, quote, without too many issues, unquote, in Japan. That's bad. That's bad when it's news that you have two cars. That's not good. It's proof that when we take our eye off of the basic story that is Williams, which is we're running this team on a shoestring, right? Relative to other teams. Mm-hmm. When we take our eyes off that, we ignore the central story to every Williams storyline, right? Like, why is Albon still there? That's an interesting story. But the fact remains, they're still running this thing on nothing.
Remind me, they didn't have an extra chassis. What is that? What it boiled down to? And is that common, Tim, that you don't have an extra one?
Yeah, you know, in my time, racing professionally, and then even covering the sport from the broadcast media side, I've never seen a professional racing team, you know, go racing without a spare car ever. And so, you know, this speaks loudly to the work that James Vowles has to do behind mm-hmm. the scenes. I mean, when we were in Bahrain, it was a struggle just for them to get one car out just for testing. And the first time we ever saw their car for this year was when they did a photo shoot for it the day before testing even started. And so they were scrambling up to the last minute to put this thing together, to get it onto the track. And, you know, a big part of that is all of the restructuring they had to do internally at this team last year between James Vowles, Pat Fry, having to come in and literally look at like, hey, how are we building a race car? And it's like done through an Excel spreadsheet. Like, where is XYZ bolt? I don't know. We lost it. What do you mean you lost it? Like, where is it? Like, that's the type of stuff that, you know, James and Pat have really had to deal with there, just trying to source parts. Where are these components? Losing these components and not knowing where they are. And to get everybody working on the same page, to retool how they build a race car, they basically said, look, this is what we're doing in the wintertime, getting everybody on the same track. We're going to take a bit of pain somewhere this season. We don't know where it's going to be, but we're going to take it. And then we're just going to move on because we're going to be better for years to come. So taking a bit of short-term pain for longer-term success is essentially what they've kind of had to do here.
And to remind everybody too, just of the logistical difficulties, not just of being Williams, but of this sport in general. When did this happen? This happened when they were on the other side of the world. They are as far from home as they can possibly get, right? Yeah. So this is hopefully we're presenting this with some empathy and saying, you know, hey, this is a big challenge. There is no team that faces more logistical challenges and no team that faces more budgetary challenges than Williams. Just to also just point out at the same time, damn, this is exceptionally weird to see.
Yeah. And they have a competitive car too. And it's not like, you know, this is this is the worst car on the grid. I mean, actually it's actually better than last year's car, and last year's car is pretty decent. So they've done well in that regards with everything that they've had to go through and all the challenges they faced.
You know who doesn't have to worry about a budget? A Japanese billionaire who built his own private members only racetrack carved into the side of a mountain. And I just want to paint this picture for you guys. It overlooks Mount Fuji and Tokyo Bay. He just wanted to be able to race with his family. It cost a minimal $200 million. And I think people are saying that it kind of looks like Jeddah and Coda had a baby. Did you guys see this viral moment?
I saw some pictures, but I wasn't sure if it was real or not.
It's real. Allegedly. Who knows what you can trust on the internet? That's wild. Is that what you would do, Spencer? You'd drop 200 mil just to be able to hang out and race with your family?
I mean, I could do it for a lot cheaper. It's called Fast and the Furious, and that's all about racing with your family. And I can do that like on any streaming service. Dude, I'm just going to say this. All right, everyone thinks this is cool, and I'll agree. In concept, it's cool. But two things. One, if you spend all of that money to build a mountainside racetrack, I know what you're doing. You're a Bond villain. There's a rocket hidden underneath that. There's some kind of plot that you're trying to unspool on the world, and I have my eye on you. Second, do you know what the best race car drivers in the world do when they want to race with their family? They do what Max Verstappen does. That's right. They stay up till 3 a.m. playing on their iRacing rig, which is a lot cheaper. A lot cheaper. You don't have to unload it. You're not going to have to sell this thing when you get in financial trouble later, which if you're the kind of guy who spends $200 million on your own private racetrack in Japan, I suspect you are the kind of guy who's going to have financial troubles later on. Okay. Get an iRacing rig. That's it. Get a rig and have somebody do it. It's a lot cheaper than this. Okay. Yeah, it's cool. But you know what else is cool? Having $200 million in your pocket. That's what the guy who buys the iRacing rig instead of building the circuit does.
Clearly he doesn't think so. And I was going to let you go, but now that you brought it up, James Bond. Who do you guys want to see be the next James Bond?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a big Idris Elba guy. I love him.
I wanted him to be James Bond so badly. Yeah. I think he's an excellent actor. Yeah. He's so handsome, but I've heard it's not going to happen. I don't know why, but I heard it's not going to happen. Spencer, give me some off the wall pick.
In his younger days, I was going to say Jack Black, but he's not All British. Right. Yeah, he's not British.
School of Rock?
Yes, from School of Rock. Yeah, from Tenacious D. I would have liked to have seen that because he would have been suaver than you think. The actual answer was Henry Cavill. I thought Henry Cavill had that in the bag.
Yeah, but he's too big. Like, he's too superhero-y. Like I think, not that James Bond has to be slender, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a different body type, in my opinion.
I mean, also,
Bulldog. I mean, his jaws are so big. Handsome, though.
Who's rumored to be James Bond?
Okay, we've really gone.
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yes.
Who's that?
He was in Bullet Train. He was one of the bad guys in the three-piece suit. He kind of looks like Jeremy White a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the guy from Chef? Yes, Chef.
Yeah. The weirdest suggestion, and I mean the weirdest viable suggestion, not just Jack Black, but the weirdest viable suggestion is Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy, if you wanted...
Oh, I could put... Yes.
If you wanted a Bond who was... definitely a little dangerous, definitely a little weird, Tom Hardy would be my suggestion.
I love Tom Hardy, but again, kind of like
he's got that MMA build. He's got a little bit of cauliflower ear going. Yeah.
He does have that. He doesn't do a whole lot of talking in his movies. Not a lot of dialogue.
A lot of grunting. Yeah.
A lot of grunting, a lot of fight scenes.
A lot of fight scenes, a lot of grunting.
Okay. You're so welcome for the, I mean, this is a very versatile podcast. So yeah, you're welcome for giving you the content that you clearly clicked on to find out about. Tim, a pleasure. Please tell us where you can find your work.
Oh yeah. Thanks very much for having me, Katie. I really appreciate it. And thanks to
are
producer.
You sure you're,
yeah,
you
yeah,
sure
no, this been, it? No, this has been great. I mean, it's been, you know, big shoes to fill in with Lawrence and Nate, but no, big thanks to Zach as well. Big thanks to Dave, to producers as well. Big thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, so I do a podcast on the SDPN network, Nailing the Apex. You can watch us on YouTube. You can get our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and also do TSN Sports Center here in Canada.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely check that out. Spencer, do you want to plug anything of worth for yourself?
Sure. You can find me on this network.
Yes, you can.
Doing Big Dumb Football, which is a YouTube series that I do about college and professional football. Additionally, you can find me on my own newsletter that I do with my partner Holly, Channel 6, or on the Shutdown Fullcast, where we talk about all kinds of stuff, but allegedly football.
Allegedly football. You guys talk about James Bond.
We talked about a little bit of James Bond, actually. A little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that? I dig it.
Not a safe for work conversation, though. So be warned, kids.
Fair enough. Thank you both. Tim, Spencer, great as always. I appreciate you. And we'll be back next week for another episode of Unlapped to give a full race preview of the Japanese Grand Prix. Cheers.